Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has declared victory in a referendum held Sunday, granting him sweeping new powers.
Resmi olmayan sonuçlar yaklaşık 25
Mr. Erdogan said, evet, our nation has, with maturity, expressed its opinion. He said 25 million people supported the plan to replace the country's parliamentary system with a powerful presidency with just over 51%. The no side appeared to prevail in major urban areas and the pro-Kurdish southeast.
Milletin kararına saygılıyız ama milletin kararı.
The leader of the opposition CHP or Republican People's Party, Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, questioned the legality of the outcome and demanded a partial recount, insisting Mr. Erdogan was seeking a one-man regime. Analyst Gareth Jenkins, who has lived in Turkey since 1989, said he's concerned about a new wave of repression.
Of course, he now has to win a presidential election in order to be able to enjoy all of these powers, and he's going to be looking at everything he did, and he only just got 51%, it appears, and I think he's going to increase the repression going forward.
The package of 18 amendments abolishes the office of prime minister and gives the president authority to draft the budget, declare a state of emergency, and issued decrees. The South Sudanese army has denied its forces killed 14 civilians on Saturday in the northwest town of Raqqa. An army spokesman called it a negative media campaign by the rebels. The rebel claim comes less than a week after the army was accused of killing 16 people in ethnically targeted attacks in the town of Wau. The UN mission in South Sudan said its workers had seen the bodies of those 16. The country has been riven by violence since December 2013. This is VOA News. Vice President Mike Pence Monday visited the Demilitarized Zone, or DMZ, along the North Korean-South Korean border. The visit comes just a day after the North's latest ballistic missile launch failed. Pence called for a denuclearized Korean peninsula.
It is an objective not just shared by the United States and the people of South Korea, but by our allies across the globe. We are heartened by the support of allies across the Asian Pacific, including China, who will continue to advance this objective on the Korean Peninsula. And I'm here to express the resolve of the people of the United States and the President of the United States to achieve that objective through peaceable means, through negotiations, but all options are on the table.
Appearing on the ABC program this week, Sunday, former U.S. ambassador to Iraq and the head of the U.S. delegation to six-party talks on Korea's nuclear program, Christopher Hill, said the U.S. is closely consulting with its ally, South Korea.
It was important to show the South Koreans that we will do everything we can, including negotiating. And so the days where the U.S. would negotiate with North Korea and leave the South Koreans at the airport wondering what was going on, those days are over.
National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster said the U.S. is working with its allies and partners, as well as China, to develop a range of options. Hope is fading for the survival of more than 20 people in the Sri Lankan capital Colombo, still trapped under mud and debris following a landslide and a giant rubbish dump. The official death toll stands at 26. National Security Advisor McMaster Sunday also met Afghan leaders in Kabul, telling ABC's This Week program the Trump administration is assessing its response to growing security threats from the Taliban and Islamic State.
What's clear here in Afghanistan is the stakes are high. This is really the modern-day frontier between barbarism and civilization. With those high stakes in mind, recognizing that the Taliban groups that we're fighting here, that the ISIS groups that we, alongside really the Afghan forces, are really fighting, and we're just enabling them in the eastern part of the country, are a threat to all civilized peoples.
Thursday, the U.S. military dropped a massive non-nuclear bomb during an operation targeting IS fighters in eastern Afghanistan. Iraqi police are accusing the Islamic State defenders of Mosul of using chemical weapons against their advancing forces. Members of Iraq's federal police said that the militants lobbed shells with chemical weapons agents in two districts Saturday. China Monday said its economy grew 6.9% in the first quarter, beating analysts' forecast and fueled by government infrastructure spending and a hot property market. It was the fastest growth in the world's second-largest economy since the third quarter of 2015. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Boateng in Washington. Today's Monday, April 17th, and here are some of the stories we're covering. Does Liberia's Elections Commission chair have a dual Liberian and U.S. citizenship?
I don't intend to argue what I am not, but I can tell you that I have already affirmed a Liberian citizenship. I am a Liberian, and I am serving in a position in the Liberian government, and I will continue to do so.
Jerome Kokoya is chairman of the National Elections Commission of Liberia. We'll speak with a lawyer who says the chairman must be definitive whether he holds a dual citizenship. Sierra Leone's former Vice President Sam Sumana will talk with us following his return to Freetown. And Zambian President Edgar Lungu says he cannot pardon main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema.
Under Zambian law, the president is not permitted at all to intervene in a legal process before a suspect is actually finally convicted by a court of law.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, and will talk with Nigeria's chief humanitarian coordinator about the risk of famine facing the country. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The chairman of Liberia's Elections Commission says he is a Liberian citizen and that those accusing him of holding a dual U.S. and Liberian citizenship are doing so to tarnish the good work his commission is doing in preparing the country for a free and credible election this year. Jerome Kokoya says those who have questions about his citizenship must do so through a court of law, where he will also have a chance to face his accusers. Liberia's election laws state that all commissioners must be Liberian citizens. Some local Liberian newspapers have recently been publishing what they claim is a picture of Mr. Kokoya's U.S. passport. Mr. Kokoya says those behind the accusations are doing so because his commission has pledged to uphold the election laws of Liberia to the letter.
James, whether or not I am a U.S. citizen is a question that should be determined by the court. What we are saying is we are simply insisting that we live in a country that is governed by law, and I have a due process right that I intend to protect. And if anyone has a claim to dictate that we are in violation of any law that makes it improper or illegal for us to serve in the position we serve, the proper forum to raise that issue is a court. The reason I don't want to get into a debate with the people who carry this around, the purpose obviously is to distract our attention from the very important work we have to do. And so I don't intend to argue what I am not, but I can tell you that I have already affirmed a Liberian citizenship. I am a Liberian, and I am serving in a position in the Liberian government, and I will continue to do so.
Mr. Chairman, I do understand what you are saying about the rule of law, and anyone who has anything to say against whether you are Liberian or not should go to the court. In a court of public opinion, let me ask, do you carry a United States passport at the moment?
James, I will not comment on what I carry and what I do not carry. I just said to you that I am a Liberian citizen. I think that should be sufficient. And anybody who holds contrary view can prove that. I am a Liberian citizen. I think that's enough. I can say that. I have said that earlier, and I said that in the statement. So whether I hold a debtor passport or whatever the effect that has, it's a matter that I believe can be determined by the proper forum. The reason is this. If you look at the whole campaign that is being launched here, it is intended to distract us, like I said. It is intended to intimidate us, and we will not do so.
Mr. Chairman, are you suggesting that there are certain people involved or connected to some campaigns in this election cycle who are spreading what you call this distraction or these innuendos about your citizenship?
Of course, James. This is easy to see. The point is, you've been a journalist for a very long time, and you follow politics. Now, what would motivate someone to go on the internet and putting a lot of, if you read the people who began this writing, every morning, you haven't heard any political party issue any statement. Those will be the first group if they are issued with the National Election Commission on our leadership. None. You haven't heard any serious stakeholder make any comment. It's coming from one group of people because we said we're going to uphold the code of conduct. Because we're going to uphold the code of conduct. That's why I annoy them. Now, you want me to take up issue with these kind of people When it gets serious, it will go to court.
As you said, you are the manager of the electoral process, and these elections for 2017, are very, very important. Suppose it turns out to say one any of the candidates in this electoral process happen to have a dual citizenship, and it's proven in court that that person has a dual citizenship. Would you enforce the ruling of the court?
James, trust me on this. I absolutely would enforce every and each law that is relevant regarding the electoral process. Whether it's a code of conduct, when the determination is made by the ombudsman, and that's what I said, and that's what angered them. And I continue to say that. So they better work hard enough for me to be removed. But if I'm not removed, I'm going to enforce those rules.
Mr. Chairman, it's so nice to talk with you, and thank you for joining us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it.
Jerome Kokoya is chairman of Liberia's Elections Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. A Liberian lawyer says the chairman of the Liberian Elections Commission must be definitive about his Liberian citizenship. Chairman Jerome Kokoya has said those accusing him of holding a dual U.S. and Liberian citizenship must prove their accusations in a court of law. But Councillor Tiawon Gonglo says the chairman's answer to the accusation is not enough. He also says the chairman could have perjured himself if he holds a U.S. passport and did not reveal that during his Senate confirmation hearing.
My view is that if he's not an American citizen, then he should affirmatively say so, that I am not a U.S. citizen. But to say let him go to court is not a direct denial. It is true that those who are concerned about his citizenship may choose to go to court. But as a public issue, I think he's on a duty to clearly state that he is not, than rather saying let him prove I am not. He is on a duty to tell the Liberian public that he is not a United States citizen.
But Councillor Gonglo, the argument can be made that the chairman was confirmed by the Liberian Senate. Why didn't the senators bring it up, and why now?
If he is a United States citizen and he did not declare that before the Liberian Senate during his confirmation hearing, then that will be perjury on our law, because you have to say that you have to declare the truth before a Senate during confirmation hearing. And we do not have dual citizenship unless we amend our constitution. So one cannot be a Liberian citizen and hold a citizenship of another country unless we amend our constitution.
Doesn't the burden of proof come on those who are making the allegations that the chairman is not a Liberian citizen or that he holds a dual citizenship?
Well, those who are accusing him to stay in the newspaper photographs of both is an American passport and a Liberian passport. So, the allegation is backed by that type of public proof.
Tiawon Gonglo is a Liberian lawyer. He was speaking with me from Monrovia. Former Sierra Leone Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana says he experienced some challenges upon his arrival in Sierra Leone last Thursday. The former vice president, who has been living in Ghana in a self-imposed exile, says he went home to register to vote in next year's presidential and legislative elections. He also says he plans to run for president. For Sierra Leone, Sierra Leone Information Minister Mohamed Bangura told VOA last week that Mr. Sam Sumana's return home was incident-free. But the former vice president tells VOA stringer Kelvin Lewis that the authorities impounded his diplomatic passport upon his arrival and refused to give him extra security.
I faced challenges when I arrived in Sierra Leone at the Lunga International Airport. At the airport, my diplomatic passport was impounded. Retrieved from me, which I was very shocked, which is not, to me, it's not a due process. When I submitted my passport to the immigration officer, and they told me that IA authorities have instructed them to retrieve my passport from me. And I know it's the property of the state, but that's not a procedure. The procedure should have been through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And I know other people, my predecessors, former vice presidents of Sierra Leone, do carry diplomatic passport, and even some former ministers do carry diplomatic passport. I don't know why they had to retrieve my passport when we're in court.
Now, do you feel threatened?
Yes, I feel very threatened. From that incident at the airport, when we came through the route we used to come to the city, Freetown, at one point we arrived at the junction called Jewey Junction. All vehicles were going through the direction which I was also planning to use. But unfortunately, there was police presence, which we thought they were there to maintain peace. But instead, they blocked our vehicles and asked us to take the other route. There was some misunderstanding, and I asked them, why don't you want us to use this that route that everybody is using? I said, well, it's instructions from above that I should not go through the city itself, and that the Inspector General of Police had instructed them that I use the side road.
Has the state provided you with any sort of security?
Absolutely. I don't see any added security that the state has provided me since I've been here. According to my officer, who is in charge of my security, my personal security, who is not a government security, is unarmed. He told me that when he met with the Inspector General of Police to provide us with armed security, his response was no, because he hasn't got the directive. From who? Maybe the president or from some other source.
Okay, so quickly, why are you back?
I am back to exercise my civic right of registering so that I cannot be disenfranchised.
Now that you've registered, what next?
I've registered, and for now, the registration is ongoing. The next thing is to be active in the political activities. But for now, I'm focusing on the issues at the ECOWAS case, the court, and after which I'll take up the next step.
So you sued the government for $250 million. What stage is that case now?
At the moment, we'll be appearing in court sometime this month, the last week of this month of April, and that's where we are at the moment.
Now, $250 million, by the time you've taken almost a year and a half to get to this stage where the case is going to be heard, it is likely that by the time the case is finally decided on, this government would be out of power. And $250 million, if you win, will be paid by the people of Sierra Leone. Are you comfortable with that?
The issue of the amount is one, as I mentioned in another media, that it is left with the court to decide. And the people of Sierra Leone, as a Sierra Leonean, it is not an issue of the money. The issue is to maintain the rule of law, my fundamental human rights. And if we talk about that, the right to work, the right to my social security, and the right to my protection, and all of these issues are much more principal to me than when we talk about money.
Have you chosen a political party?
Not at the moment.
Chief Samuel Sam Sumana is Sierra Leone's former vice president. He was speaking with viewers Kelvin Lewis in Freetown, Sierra Leone. Today's Monday, April 17th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 18 and a half minutes past the hour. Zambian President Edgar Lungu is accusing some unnamed foreign diplomats of meddling in Zambia's internal affairs. This after the president says he cannot pardon main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema, who is jailed for refusing to give way to a presidential motorcade.
That statement was a reaction to some submissions by NGOs and some Western diplomats who were urging the president to intervene and release Mr. Hakainde Hichilema. Under Zambian law, the president is not permitted at all to intervene in a legal process before a suspect is actually finally convicted by a court of law. So without a conviction, the president cannot instruct the police to release a suspect. He's been charged. He hasn't appeared in court. A pardon is only available to prisoners. That is to say, people have been convicted of an offense. A suspect is merely a suspect, and he cannot be pardoned. A judicial process has begun. An arrest has been made, and charges have been leveled against Mr. Hakainde Hichilema. We are all awaiting a fair trial to take place. When that trial has taken place, and if he's convicted at all, then under a constitutional provision called prerogative of mercy, the president is empowered to pardon anybody, commute sentence of anybody, to completely release a person from prison using that power.
Amos, how true is this? The president is also warning members of the opposition UPND, saying that some of them met in Lusaka, that they will cause trouble for the government if President Lungu does not release or pardon Mr. Hakainde.
That is very true. The president spoke in the light of a meeting that happened in the night of the other day, where opposition MPs were agitating to cause a problem in order to put pressure on the president to release Mr. Hakainde Hichilema. As I've told you, any intervention at this stage would be illegal. So he does not understand how lawmakers, members of parliament, will be agitating to push him in the corner in order for him to commit an illegality. Instead, he has warned that the law is blind to social status. He's going to take stern measures for police who arrest any troublemaker. To quote his words, there is enough prison space for any law black. He did issue that stern warning, yes, I can confirm.
Does your government believe that some foreigners are, let's say, involved or trying to interfere in the local Zambian affairs?
Yes, he does have intelligence briefings that clearly that they are plotting to put pressure on him in order to release Mr. Hakainde Hichilema. That amounts to unnecessary and blatant interference, not just in the internal affairs, in the sacrosanct part of our judicial process here in this country. If anything can be interfered with, there is one thing that we keep sacred. It's a judiciary. We cannot have, for instance, a diplomat from country A instructing the president to pardon a suspect. Is totally unacceptable. So he does have that information. What he has advised them to do is, if they feel so strongly that they must get themselves involved in the criminal justice system, what they need to do, according to the president, is to advise these lawbreakers, because some of the illegalities that the opposition members are committing are some of the things they have pronounced before that they would do. So what would be advisable for those Western diplomats is to advise those lawbreakers not to break the law. Then there will be no concern about who is in prison and who is not.
I guess those who are calling for the president to pardon Mr. Hichilema, just for the stability of the country, because he's the main opposition leader, to put him in jail is to create tension in the country.
Do you suggest to me that there will be stability if somebody rams into the presidential motorcade, if somebody drives into the presidential motorcade willfully in order to disrupt a peaceful procession? Would that be stability?
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. According to the United Nations, Nigeria is one of four countries now facing the risk of famine. Nigerian government's chief humanitarian coordinator, Dr. Ayoade Alakija, talked to Ricky Stryak about the number of people in danger of starving and why.
For the humanitarian crisis in Nigeria, we have 14 million people in need of assistance, but we have about 8.5 in need of immediate life-saving assistance. In terms of the most pressing needs right now, I would say food is the most pressing need right now as we go into an early lean season in Nigeria, because people haven't been able to farm for over 4 years. So food and medical sort of nutrition and ensuring that people's sort of nutritional and preventative medical needs are met, I would say are pretty critical at this moment.
The typical lean season starts in June, you said, and it's starting now. What is the reason for this? Do you guys know?
I'm told that it's multifactorial. The crisis has prevented people in that region from farming, and of course the major, most of them are subsistence farmers for starters, but also I'm told that we're down on yield from last year, down to about 60%, so that food stores even within are not at the levels that they would normally be. We have 5.1 million people by our estimates in need of immediate food aid.
There are obviously many obstacles to, even if the food is there, I think, to get the food to some of these regions. Did you talk about some of those obstacles to getting the food to people who have, especially in Nigeria, been displaced?
What you're referring to is what we refer to in the humanitarian world as access issues. And there have been access issues, because one of the messages I've been trying to get out there is that we are still in an active sort of conflict situation. But Boko Haram is still, the insurgents are still bombing, they're still hiding out in bushes, whilst the conflict and the most immediate war is over, as it were, the conflict continues. And therefore, it is difficult for humanitarian actors to get to certain areas with food aid. And you refer to displaced peoples. And again, I'd like to speak to that. that when humanitarian actors are going out into those communities, I said, Ricky, that there are 8.5 million people in immediate need of aid, but only 1. Something million of those are displaced.
Dr. Ayoade Alakija is the Nigerian government chief humanitarian coordinator. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Dakar. Time for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the results of the CAF Confederations Cup playoff, played across various venues on the continent this past weekend, with 15 teams confirmed for the group stage. ZESCO United of Zambia qualified for the group stage of the CAF Confederations Cup after beating Nigeria's Rangers International 3-0 after a 5-2 aggregate win, having played 2-2 in the first leg encounter in Enugu. Two South African clubs, Platinum Stars and SuperSport United, also sealed their places in the group stage, while Platinum Stars defeated Ivory Coast side AS Tanda 2-0 in Rutenburg to ensure their tie finished 2-2 on aggregate before going on to win 5-4 on post-match penalties. SuperSport United, on the other hand, thrashed Liberia's Barak Young Controllers 5-0 to advance 6-1 on aggregate. The biggest fixture on Sunday saw Algerian giant JS Kabylie playing a goalless draw with defending champions TP Mazembe in Sizi Onu, allowing the DR Congo side to advance 2-0 on aggregate. Rivers United defeated Round Sport 2-0 in the first leg, while the return leg is expected to be played on the 22nd of April as ASEC Mimosas and CF Monana settled for a goalless draw. Monana progresses 2-1 on aggregate. Al Hilal Al Ubayid defeated Gambian Ports Authority 3-0 as Al Hilal won 4-1 on aggregate. In other Saturday's result, Club African of Tunisia thrashed Port Louis of Mauritius 4-2, while FUS Rabat came out tops in the Moroccan battle for supremacy after they drew 1-1 with Maghreb Fiez. Rabat had won the first leg 2-1 and go through 3-2 on aggregate. South Africa's Bidvest Wits lost 1-0 to Samoa of Egypt after the first leg ended goalless. Elsewhere, Angola's Recreativo do Lobolo drew 0-0 against Synapse of Madagascar and go through courtesy of an away goal in the first leg's 1-1 draw. On Friday, Sfaxien became the first team to progress to the tournament's group stage with a 2-0 win over Kadiogo of Burkina Faso. The Tunisian side had won the first leg 2-1 last week. Swaziland's Mbane Swallows pulled off one of the most definitive comebacks to thrash Congo's AC Leopards 4-0. Also on Friday, the Swallows had lost the first leg 1-0 only to hit back and progress 4-1 on aggregate. The draw for the group stage will be held at the CAF headquarters in Cairo, Egypt on the 26th of April 2017. Now to athletics. South African long-distance runner Lugile Gonqua has won the 56-kilometer Two Oceans Marathon in Cape Town in the time of 3 hours, 9 minutes and 36 seconds. This was Gonqua's maiden win in the Two Oceans Marathon, while it was the first a South African has won the race since 2013. In boxing news, Namibian Julius Idongo unified the super lightweight division on Saturday night after beating Ricky Bonds by unanimous decision in Glasgow. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that's it for this Monday, April 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Charles Hall, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying have a productive day.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC. 2200 hours.